in your face, all over the place. We're online 24/7. The hottest internet radio station. Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Philip D. Blackman, host of the Philip D. Blackman Show. Join me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday right here at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. But in the meantime, friends, buckle up, get your mind right, and get ready for the fastest hour in radio. Thank you for tuning in. Let's get it started.
Listen up. The views and opinions of this radio show and podcast are prepared and provided by Philip D. Blackman in his personal capacity. The opinions expressed in this show are my own, and they do not reflect the view of this radio station, broadcasting platform, or any organization Philip D. Blackman is a member of. The material and information presented in this broadcast is for general information purposes only. Any and all media presented are the property of their respective owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. Let's get started.
Man, it's going to be a big one today, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Wednesday. And we're going to get this show together going. The murder of Tyree Nichols.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another WTF Wednesday. I'm your host, Philip D. Blackman, and welcome to the fastest hour in radio. So here it is, guys, on January the 7th. If you've been living under a rock and you're not really sure what's been going on, my goodness. January 7th, we had five black police officers of the Memphis Police Department severely beat and kill, or severely beat Tyree Nichols, a 29-year-old black man, during a traffic stop. Now, the reason why we're bringing up race is because that's funny. We always, you know, are curious about the race. We always lead with the race for some reason. But here it is. What makes this one so unique now is because we have people making arguments on either side about, is this white supremacy? Is this racism? Well, let's just call it what it is. It's flat out wrong. On January the 10th, Mr. Nichols succumbed to his injuries. On January the 27th, body cam footage was finally released from the police officers who arrested Nichols. And all five police officers were released one day after they were charged with second-degree murder in relation to his death. So tonight, we're going to be reviewing everything that we know about the incident and call it what it is, man. This is just good old-fashioned murder, and America should be concerned. Now, look, if you're tuning in, catching me over here on the social media platforms, and ladies and gentlemen, you can find me right there at the Philip D. Blackman Show at Facebook, at YouTube, as well as LinkedIn. Now, if you're in the Twitter space or Twitch, then, of course, you can find me at the PDB Show, where you can catch all of our shows every day of the week, and, you know, twice on Sunday sometimes. But guys, we're live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. However, if you want to comment, do so on the social media chats, or you can call or text the number on the screen at 409-245-9753. Again, for my listeners across the airwaves, that is 409-245-9753. Again, to all my listeners across the nation, around the globe, thank you so much for tuning in this Wednesday episode. Episode 322, WTF Wednesday. We're talking about the murder of Tyree Nichols, ladies and gentlemen. Let's try to present what we know. All right, so on January the 5th, we had five black police officers, the Memphis PD, they severely beat Tyree Nichols, a 29-year-old black man, during a traffic stop. Now, Nichols was hospitalized in critical condition, and he died 3 days later. So the officers that you see on the screen here, they claim to have stopped Nichols for reckless driving. They pulled him from his car. They used pepper spray on him. They tasered him. During the incident, he managed to break away. And we'll get into all of that. He managed to break away and escape the initial detention. And so when the police officers caught up with him, they beat him for about 3 minutes for whatever the reason is. I'm not real sure yet. We're you know, I believe in letting the evidence come out. But, man, these videos, they're really hard to argue when you watch the relentless punching and kicking in the head and striking him on the back with their batons while he was restrained. You know, they say, give me your hands, but they don't take his hands. But both the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation and the Department of Justice have now thankfully opened up an investigation. Hopefully we can get, you know, I mean, the video's pretty damning, very similar to what happened with George Floyd. The video is damning, and we're going to try to our best to not jump to conclusions. We're just going to react to what we know. Because, you know, this thing happened, the video was released last Friday, and I've held off on it. And the reason why is because I believe in trying to report it correctly, not first. You know, it's easy to jump out there first and try to be the first one to put a show out so you can go viral. Well, then you get things wrong. Well, we're trying to let the battlefield develop, and we're seeing right now. Man, there's a lot of things that makes this real, real hard to support. So all five officers who were involved initially were fired January the 20th. So they had preliminary results of release of an autopsy that was commissioned by Nichols' family. It was released on January 23, and it found, quote, extensive bleeding caused by a severe beating. Now, the five officers were arrested January the 26th. They were charged with murder, kidnapping, assault, and misconduct. Now, there's also three firefighters, two emergency medical technicians, and a lieutenant who attended the scene. They were also relieved of duty, and they were also fired for failing to conduct an adequate assessment, a patient assessment of Mr. Nichols. Now, two other police officers were also later relieved of duty. January 27, this past Friday, the Memphis Police Department released four video clips of edited video from January the 7th showing various events between 8:24 p.m. and 9:02 p.m. And it's the release of this body cam footage that, plus the surveillance footage that we have seen already right now, widespread protests. Now, this is nowhere near like the protests we saw in 2020. Tyree Nichols' mother, man, right out of this shoot, such grace, the father, such strength to say, look, don't go out there and destroy the cities we live in, because that is not what my son would have wanted. That's not what he stood for. I also think the probably the reason why some of the protests were a little bit minimized is because of the obvious reason. We had fast and rapid movement on the police. The police force, they jumped to, and they indicted at least five of these individuals, regardless if they're if they're going to go to jail or not. At least the police department is making that move. So what I want to do in this segment, guys, my favorite segment, of course, if you've watched my show very long, you know my favorite segment is the breakdown, and this is where we're going to actually get into what we know. Because there's a lot about this whole thing that stinks. But before I do, before I jump into it, first and foremost, thank you all. We see my wife, Tammy, flat out murder. She says, Rich LaMonica in the chat says, it's murder. Roxanne Kirby, good to see you again, ma'am. I hope you're well. Pat Alfrey says in the chat, he says, excessive use of force, but at the same time, an innocent man wouldn't try to escape. You know, Pat, I want you to hold on to that thought because, you know what, let's go ahead. Well, I don't want to get too far in front of myself, but here's the thing that a lot of people are saying over this case with Tyree Nichols, an innocent man wouldn't try to escape. Well, at the same time, well, okay, true. But you also, I don't know if you've seen the video or not, but the video is quite alarming. And I'm going to tell you something. When someone is, you know, because in the initial video that I'm going to show, the very first one I'm going to show, you're going to hear very clear Tyree Nichols say, I mean, you know, y'all are, the guy who's getting his ass kicked is the one who's trying to de-escalate the whole situation. You know, so I guess I'm curious, if you're trying to de-escalate a situation and you're still getting the treatment, if you want to call it, you know, what they called the haymakers, as the police were bragging later on after the assault, you know, at some point, if you're calling for peace and you're trying to, you know, if you're trying to remain calm, you're trying to comply, and you're still getting pretty rough. You're getting roughhoused. I mean, human nature says you, at some point, man, human nature is going to take over. You know, if you're getting pepper sprayed, well, don't put and if you get pepper sprayed and you're trying to wipe that stuff out of your eyes, because that is the body's response. It burns, and the natural response is, I want to wipe my eyes. And then, so now, oh, stop resisting. Well, you just sprayed me in the eyes. You know, your body wants to respond to the pain. But in this case here, I argue that Tyre Nichols, not only was he responding to pain, but he was also responding to fear. Obviously, I don't know if he lived with his mother, but I know he was about, he was just right up the road. I want to say between 800 meters, what, two blocks, I guess, from his mother's home. So he was obviously trying to go to where there's witness, where maybe someone can help him, because he recognized it was a bad situation. I can't say that I wouldn't have run either. Roxanne Kirby says in the chat, it was horrible, no matter who he was or what color. Laura Harlow says, yes, excessive. Maybe the man was mentally ill and they scared him, so he ran. That's pure conjecture. But that is a question you're asking. But there is no evidence to support any mental illness. Unless you want to call temporary fear a mental illness, then absolutely he was mentally ill. I would have been mentally ill at that point, because that was unbelievably scary. Let's hit the breakdown. All right, so we got a lot of comments coming in, guys. Thank you so much. I see my man Zach. He's a cop. He was a former police officer. He's got a lifetime of grown up experience doing it. Maybe he'll kind of chime in. But I want to hit this breakdown. I want to talk about what we know. But I see your comments, ladies and gentlemen, and I will hit them. But I got a lot of show to cover, and I feel like I may end up running out of time. And that's okay, because, you know, it's a two-hour show. It's the Philip D. Blackman Show, and you know what? We're going to take what we can. But here it is, as we know it. I want to open this segment first and foremost with what is initially reported by the police. This right here is the Shelby County Sheriff's Office MPD police report right here that was filed. And as I go through it, if you haven't heard of this case, If you read the police report, if you don't know anything about this case, just by reading the police report alone, not following social media, what anybody else has to say, man, this looks like a pretty cut and dried case. It sounds like it was business as usual. The cops were dealing with a guy. He was very aggressive. They tried non-lethal means on him. He was still very aggressive, unresponsive. It's a great narrative, if only it were true. So the first off, I want to show you right here as we zoom in. We have it already laid out. Officer Darnell Mathis, he is one of the cops. He is the incident commander, and he wrote this report at 10:05 p.m., which is about an hour and 40 minutes from the incident. This report, by the time it was done, he submitted it about 6 hours from the incident. Now, if you look right here, it says that Officer Mathis has listed Tyre Nichols as a suspect and Officer Emmett Martin III as a victim. Now, Officer Emmett Martin III is a victim. That means he was a victim of an assault, which maybe would try to justify what happened. But I want to show you here, this is what the report is. Obviously it's really hard to read, but I did transcribe it. So I want to read you the actual police report that was submitted on 1/8/23. Right here it says, quote, on January the 7th, 2023 at 2026 hours, Officer McKinney responded to an ag assault at Raines and Ross Road. Detective Martin observed a 2017 blue Nissan Sentra bearing Tennessee tag, it is what it is, driving recklessly at a high rate of speed. Detective Martin observed suspect Tyre Nichols going west on Raines into oncoming traffic, is the report, on East Raines Road before conducting a traffic stop. Detective Martin made contact with the driver suspect Tyre Nichols, commanded him to exit the vehicle. Suspect Tyre Nichols was refusing lawful detention by law enforcement officers and he started to fight with the detectives. This is all in the police report, ladies and gentlemen. It goes on to say that the detectives noticed that suspect Tyree Nichols was sweating profusely. He was irate when he exited the vehicle. Remember these words. He goes on to say the detective gave verbal commands to stop resisting, and then the suspect, Tyree Nichols, grabbed for Detective Martin's gun. Detective Haley gave verbal commands and then deployed his chemical agent. The chemical agent had no effect, and suspect Tyree Nichols continued to resist. Suspect Tyree Nichols continued to fight detectives, gave verbal commands again to stop resisting. It goes on to write, Detective Hemphill deployed his taser into suspect Tyree Nichols' torso area, but the taser had no effect. Suspect Tyree Nichols pulled the probes out and began running southbound on Ross Road. Detectives Mills and Ryan, it's real hard to read there, but it says Detective Mills and Ryan, I believe it says, pursued suspect Tyree Nichols and located him on Bear Creek. So that is the initial contact that they made. Let's see how this contact matches up with the video. I don't know what you guys are seeing, but I didn't see irate. He's not fighting. That's Tyree Nichols saying, you guys are really doing a lot right now. All right, so here it is. The whole narrative, the whole police report is saying that he got out irate. I didn't see that. Said that they gave verbal commands to stop resisting, and then the suspect, he grabbed for Detective Martin's gun. Again, I don't see that either. But you know, one of the things it was a game in the military, especially if you guys have ever been in the military, if you've never seen this thing called the swarm. It happens at basic training, or it happens a lot of military institutions where you have a lot of the cadre, a lot of the guys in authority, they'll swarm someone they're trying to intimidate, or trying to, a private, whatever the case is, and they'll give conflicting orders. Oh, well, you're ignoring him, but you're listening. You know, in this case here, this man, he was getting a lot of different directions from a lot of different people. You heard him say, y'all are taking, this is a little too much. I'm on the ground. Well, get on the ground, roll on your stomach, give me your hands. There was no real true command and control. And by the way, five cops, or we know at least three were there at the time, but three cops at the minimum couldn't restrain a 140-pound guy. I mean, come on, y'all. But I want to hit some of these comments here. Because I'm going to tell you right now that the video that we just saw does not match what the police report says. And if you ever get the chance to go back and invest the hour and some change to watch these videos, you're going to see them create their own narrative. You're going to see them create their own story, trying to get their shit together before they have to write their report. But here it is. Rich LaMonica in the chat says he died 80 meters from his house yelling for his mama. Absolutely. Because I think personally that's where he was running, because that was his place of solace, hollering for his mama, hoping that maybe she can come out there and stop this ass whooping from happening. Laura Harlow says, I thought he died later in the hospital. He did die later at the hospital. 3 days later is according to the reports. Roxanne Kirby says, if he was being beaten to death, yeah, he would have tried to get away. Who wouldn't? Zach Clark says, those cops need to be handed justice. And we hope, Zach, that justice will be served. Remember, the justice system has to run its course, and man, I hope with all hope that there's enough evidence to square this away. Rich says that he was pronounced at the hospital, but he was not alive at the scene. Tammy says that he was not dead on the scene. He was still conscious when they put him in an ambulance. There's still stories that are coming in. So as it develops, you know, there is more that, you know, we hope that will come out. I don't know which one I hope for, but then the end of the story is Mr. Nichols is deceased and he didn't have to be. Laura says it was a disturbing video. Yeah, we can see the body cam from the initial stop. Rich LaMonica, initial three officers turned off BWC. So many of the views are from the later arrivals and the cams. Tammy says they described his reckless driving he was doing, but there has been no video from a dash cam provided. Bobby Balaguer, hey, I would have run from being killed as well. Rich LaMonica saw something on our local news that reckless driving was also not a true thing. I believe that. Tammy says, if it's true, Pat, then we need to back it up with a dash cam. Zach Clark says, in my opinion, this is definitely an excessive use of force by the police. If he was compliant at any point, force stops at that point. But per what I've read in the case, these cops were in the wrong. They need to be dealt with because they gave law enforcement a bad name. Laura says, watch Officer Tatum's video analyzing this video. I will check with Officer Tatum. He is an amazing guy. Laura says that he pointed all kind of things they should not have done. Talking about the swarm, the shark attack. She says, I heard they're all out on bail now, and as I understand, they are too. F. Killer says, so are black cops racist too? I think he got auto-corrected or something. But so are black cops racist too? Man, I think everybody can be racist. It's not, to me, racism doesn't know a color, contrary to what they'll tell you. But we're going to get into that, actually, in the second half of the show, about this whole idea of white supremacy surrounding this murder. Laura Harlow says, I keep forgetting to turn on live chat. Hey, that's all right. All right, so look, I want to get back into this police report. So we've covered the initial contact. So the police report continues. It says that, quote, after a brief release, suspect Tyree Nichols was detained at Bear Creek Circle in Castlegate. While attempting to detain suspect Tyree Nichols, he began actively resisting by pulling duty belts and grabbing Officer Smith by the vest. He was given multiple commands to stop resisting, which he ignored. Chemical agent was deployed again, and it was ineffective. Detective Mills deployed his department-issued ASP baton while giving verbal commands to stop resisting, striking him several times on the right arm, attempting to get the suspect Tyree Nichols to comply. After verbal command, detectives were able to get the suspect Tyree Nichols in custody. Then it goes on to talk about the fire engine showed up. They made a scene. They transported suspect to St. Francis Park in critical condition. Now, this last sentence right here really got me, and I hope I do not disrespect this woman's name. But in the last sentence says, suspect Tyree Nichols' mother, Rovon Wells, of her, and he gave her address, made the scene and advised that the suspect Tyree Nichols went out with friends and she believes they may have spiked his drink. That is the report that he says in the last sentence. Suspect Tyree Nichols' mother made the scene and advised that her son went out with friends and she believes they may have spiked his drink. I wonder if she actually said that, because so far this police report is about 70% right. But did she say that? Or did she make this? Did she show up after the fact, or did they go knock on the door? However they got there, well, your son, you know, he was really strong. We think he's on something. Oh, well, someone must have spiked his drink because he doesn't do any drugs. Was it a coerced admission? Is that, because I promise you that sentence right there is going to come out in court. Did you think your son, you know, what made you think that? Well, but the cop told me that he was strung out on something. That's what they believed, and it is in the video. But, you know, the problem that's bothered me with all of this, and I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to show you the poll footage. All right, so here we have this camera footage. You got three police officers on Mr. Nichols at this time. One of them, obviously, he's been pepper sprayed, so you got one guy fighting. I'm not understanding, and if you watch the provided body cam footage, I mean, if you can see Mr. Nichols already rubbing his eyes, he's wiping his eyes. Now we just walk up. Okay, there's your nice little kick. I guess he's doing his best Doug Flutie or something. But this cop just walks up and just kicks Tyree Nichols in the face right here on the corner of Castlegate. He kicked him for what reason? There's another kick for you if you're interested in watching. You're telling me, and none of these police officers are little dudes. They're all big men. You're telling me three of you guys, none of you guys know a damn jiu-jitsu hold. None of you guys know an arm lock. None of you guys know how to put that arm behind the back. None of you guys know how to control the legs. Look, I don't typically like to troubleshoot and beat up my cops, but Jesus Christ. All right, so now we're going to pull out our baton. All right, we got a fourth cop walks up, pulls up a baton. He's getting positioned. Bam, you're going to hit him in his right arm. One, two, and he's, all right, three. All right, so Tyree stands up with the cops, you know, helping him. They're holding on to his arms. The guy with the baton, they're actually, this looks like, oh, boom, there's a right punch. Man, this looks like something off WWE. Two guys holding one guy while the third guy is wailing on his face. There's another. We're going to hit him in the face. Oh, and we're going to hit him in the face for a fourth time. He finally goes to his knees. And again, no, where are these cops trying to grab the, where are the cops trying to grab his arms? Where did this young man try to grab at a police vest or try to grab at a belt? Maybe when he was standing up, I'm not sure, but can you see how the narrative that's being painted is making this guy look like he's an asshole? And this is not the case. This guy is not fighting back. You know, this guy cop camera they were watching and the officer's body's camera split into four videos. There's four videos out there. And police can be heard yelling at Nichols, get out of his car, and removing him from the car. And the video's been described by his attorneys. It is appalling what happened in that initial contact. You know, we got these officers are sitting here. They're kicking him for what reason? You know, at least twice in the face, striking him at least three or four times with a baton in his upper body, punching him in at least four times in the face, punching him at least two more times in the upper body area, kicking him at least twice in the abdomen. Where is this? I mean, it shows the first video I showed you shows him getting out of the car. He's telling him, "I didn't do anything. Ah, get on the fucking ground. I'm going to tase your ass." You know, I don't get wound up about the language that's being used because everybody's excited at this point. But you can actually hear Nichols. You guys are really doing a lot right now. I'm just trying to go home. And for his troubles, he's getting worked over. Why? Where's the outrage on this? I'm just trying to figure out, you know, because, you know, there's so many people that will jump, come out there and be rushed to defend the cops blindly. And that's the problem. You know, because in this video right here that you're watching on this poll cam, EMS doesn't arrive. They arrive about 9 minutes, 30 seconds in. Okay, depending on where they're coming from, pretty decent response. But they didn't lay hands on this guy. He's done. He's out. He's done for the fight. Right now, he's proned out. He is secured. They're walking around looking for flashlights and looking for everything else. But this violent guy that Tyree Nichols apparently is, who's irate and trying to grab at cops' guns, he's in a pile right now. He's a pile of mush. And right now there's zero desire to render any kind of aid. I mean, hey, at least they're sitting him up here and they're going to drag him about 10 or 15 feet to lean him against the car. Okay, fine. But no aid was given at all. At all. When you see this happen, these police officers just beating the hell out of this guy. You know, in one of the videos in the body cam, it shows an officer that was running toward the second scene, and that officer's hands can be seen pushing Nichols into the ground, and the camera goes dark, and you can hear him screaming for his mom, trying to get her attention to come out. You know, there's sound of a man moaning and crying, and, you know, somebody actually tells, all you hear is breathe, bro, and it could be the cops talking to each other, because, again, these guys got pepper sprayed. And that's kind of the rub here. The guy, again, Tyree Nichols is pepper sprayed, and they're asking him not to respond at all. Give me your hands. But yet these cops who have been pepper sprayed before, they know what it's about. These cops, if you go watch these videos, there's a couple of them. You can see them. They're just overreacting. They're panicking. Oh, man, give me some water. My face is burning. My lips are on fire. Holy crap, right? All of this stuff is happening. These police officers, that's their response to pepper spray. But yet, when this guy gets blasted in the face, he's not being aggressive. I challenge anyone. Call my show, 409-245-9753. Chime in the chat. Fight. Someone tell me where these cops are wrong, where Tyree Nichols did anything wrong in this. You know, the Memphis mayor, you know, come out and spoke very quickly, talking about this is beyond just about anything they'd ever seen. This is a true disregard for life. It's a duty of care that all police officers are sworn in to uphold. You know, that level of physical altercation, that was way above what was required of any law enforcement. Period. After the incident, you know, when the EMTs show up, Nichols actually starts to complain of having a shortness of breath. he was transported to Memphis St. Francis Hospital in critical condition. Now, he died 3 days later, Mr. Nichols did, for a traffic stop. Now, we hear that a lot. Well, he died because of a traffic stop. Well, I don't know, because we don't have anything besides that moment where the police roll up and drag him out of his vehicle. However, in one of the videos, as they're getting their story straight, it's a video from NBC. At about the 17:30 mark, you hear them talking about, yeah, man, I was hitting him with haymakers. They was laughing. Oh, yeah, we hit him with haymakers. Everybody jumped in and dropped bombs, right? At 18:30 minutes in, they're starting to get their story straight. And the initial contact is where they talk about, well, he swerved toward my vehicle. And this is one of the lines one of the cops said. He said, oh, he was driving an oncoming vehicle. He swerved at mine. And then he stopped at a red light and turned on his blinker. All right, look, ladies and gentlemen, there was no traffic on that road. You can see it while they're wrestling with Nichols. To say that, to admit right there, I don't know if it was a Freudian slip or what, but he actually said he stopped at the red light and turned on his blinker. And that's when they boxed him in. I mean, if a guy's trying to evade police, if he's driving recklessly, if he's exhibiting all the reasons that they say this traffic stop happened, who driving recklessly would just stop somewhere, turn on their blinker, and wait for the cops? That doesn't make sense to me. I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around it. So was this because of a traffic stop? Who knows? But it's the behavior after that traffic, after they went hands-on with him, it's that behavior right there that makes this so foul. All five of these cops were fired last Thursday. They're all indicted on second-degree murder, ag murder, aggravated assault, acting in concert, two counts of aggravated kidnapping, two counts of official misconduct, and one count of official oppression. So on January the 18th, the federal investigations began when Kevin Ritz, he's a U.S. attorney out of Tennessee, he announced the FBI and the DOJ are going to be investigating the incident. He went on to say that state authorities have publicly announced that the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation is investigating. Now, on January the 20th, the firing of the police officers happened. They got fired January 20th. This incident happened on January the 7th. He died on January the 10th. So 10 days later, these cops were fired. And they announced that all of them were following an investigation into Nichols' death. The officers that are identified as Tadarius Bean, Demetrius Haley, Emmett Martin III, Desmond Mills Jr., and Justin Smith. You see them right there on the screen. For those of you who are listening on the radio, if you don't know, again, all four of these police officers are black gentlemen. Again, I don't understand why we're discussing the race of these cops or discussing the race of the victim is necessary, but that is the talking point right now. But on January the 26th, so what, 6 days later after these officers were arrested, or after the grand jury indicted these officers involved in this incident, they've each been charged with murder. They were in custody. They've been charged, again, second-degree murder. There's an independent autopsy, again, that was released that completed a forensic pathologist hired by the family's attorneys that said that Nichols suffered from extensive bleeding caused by a severe beating. The report says that his observed injuries are consistent with what families and attorneys witnessed in the video of his fatal encounter with police on January 7. Further details and findings of this independent report will be disclosed at another time, and we hope it does, but this is horrible. So January the 27th, the next day, the body cam footage last Friday was released, and that's when people really started finding their outrage. You know, the city was, they you know, for the transparency and bravo, I'm glad you did it sooner than later. The city shared the footage from the body cameras as well as a poll camera, So they got about 67 minutes of video that's actually in total. Now, on January the 30th, officials have announced that there were two more officers who've been relieved of duty. So now that makes five that have been indicted, two who have been relieved of duty, three Memphis PD guys or fire department guys have been fired. Now, one of the officers, Preston Hemphill, he was the guy you saw in the initial contact. He's the one, he was the officer actually who deployed his taser. And you can actually see it in his own body cam. But I think what's going to get Officer Hemphill in trouble is when you in his body cam, you can see him chasing Nichols down the road, but then he turns back to the scene of the initial stop and he actually says it on body camera. He says, "I hope they stomp his ass." And that's exactly what happened. He called for it. That is an admission that you wanted something bad to happen to this guy. There is no excuse for what we're looking at on our screen right now. This is Tyree Nichols in the hospital. I'm assuming one of his family took the photo. There is no defense of this beating. There's no defense at all. You know, every show we do end of watch and we talk about the great sacrifices that these great men and women happen to do every day. And these five cops are shit stains on the career of good and great law enforcement members we have around our country. There is no reason for what happened to Tyree Nichols. Tyree Nichols didn't get killed because of racism. Tyree Nichols got killed because of stupid fucking cops. Aaron Favatella says it here. He says it's not right. Are any of the officers working double or OSC not there? Who knows? Tammy says that one sprayed himself. He immediately got up and ran away. Yes, he did. Laura says, I don't like the way they built up the release of the video on Friday evening as it was getting dark. Who's driving that train? Who knows? Foul is a good word. Aaron Favatella says, good. They're all fired racist, part of the current narrative. And it is, and that's what I'm going to get into in this next section here, Aaron, because I'm trying to dispel this whole white supremacy connection because apparently white supremacy can do everything. Aaron says that if they go to prison, they aren't going to be in general population. I believe that. Tammy says their bond amounts were disgustingly low, between $250,000 and $350,000 for murder. That is unbelievable. But guys, that's the breakdown. We're going to wrap up this one. I'm ready to move on to our next section. But before we do, when we come back after this next segment, we're going to be getting into the conversation that's surrounding this tragic case. And I can't believe that I actually have to cover it. But we're going to have to. We're going to have to shoot down this BS narrative about racial, a racist attack, you know, as far as this case goes. This is an emotionally charged episode for me, and it doesn't stop right here. You know, we've come to the point in our show where we take a very special moment to honor our men and women in the law enforcement community who've given their lives in service to their great nations, their great cities, and their great towns, wherever they are. You know, these great heroes who are out there on the streets every day, now they have the repercussions of these types of acts like this, that's given another black eye on the career of what these law enforcement members do. Last year, 229 members, law enforcement members lost their lives. 229 families that don't have a loved one across their table. This one right here is very unique. This one was very tough. We had a hard time covering it Monday. We're going to try to do better, but we come to the point where we take this moment to pause, reflect, and honor a true hero. We're going to continue to honor our heroes every show until people start highlighting these heroes, sacrifices, these good cops, like they do that poor misunderstood criminal. This week, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a very special moment to honor Customs and Border Patrol Supervisory Officer Jacqueline Jacqueline Montero in this opening segment, End of Watch. Montanaro.
The Philip D. Blackman Show proudly salutes Supervisory Officer Jacqueline Montanaro, 40, of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, who died a hero on January 14, 2023, trying to save her 6-year-old daughter, who also perished from a fire at their private residence. Officer Montanaro served the DHS for 16 honorable years. William Montanaro said of his wife and daughter, "I am heartbroken. I have lost the love of my life, my beautiful wife Jackie, and my sweet, loving, spunky little girl Madeline. Jackie was a hero." Officer Montanaro is survived by her husband, daughter, and parents. On behalf of the Philip D. Blackman Show and a grateful nation, thank you for your service, Officer Montanaro. Department of Homeland Security Officer Jacqueline Montanaro. End of watch, January 14th, 2023. Rest in peace, officer.
What makes this one so special, Officer Montanaro, is a storyboard. Officer Jackie Montanaro died from the injuries that she sustained while trying to rescue her daughter from a house fire in Hazlet, New Jersey. When a fire broke out around midnight, it says that Officer Montanaro evacuated from her burning home with her husband and 8-year-old daughter. Her husband went in initially. He was engulfed in black smoke. He immediately ran out, and then Officer Montanaro re-entered the home in an attempt to rescue her 6-year-old daughter, who was still inside. Officer Montanaro, she was found unconscious, trapped inside with trauma to her arms and hands, where she was transported to Cooperman Barnabas Medical Center, where she succumbed to her injuries at 1:40 in the morning. Her 6-year-old daughter also unfortunately did not survive. So on behalf of the Philip D. Blackman Show and all of my listeners, our heartfelt thoughts and condolences and prayers, of course, go out to Officer Montanaro's family. May you rest in peace, hero.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Julie, hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Ronnie, how happy are folks who save hundreds of dollars switching to Geico?
I'd say happier than a camel on Wednesday.
Hump day!
Get happy. Yeah! Get Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Paralyzed Veterans of America helps people with disabilities, veterans and civilians alike, regain their independence and move forward in life. Since 1946, Paralyzed Veterans of America is a leading steadfast advocate for quality health care, spinal cord research and education, veterans benefits, and civil rights for paralyzed veterans and all people with disabilities, and offers support for caregivers. PVA's mission? To empower America's brave men and women to regain what they fought for, their freedom and independence. If you are a disabled veteran seeking support, or if you are a veteran or civilian and you wish to give support, call Paralyzed Veterans of America today, toll-free, at 1-800-424-8200, or visit pva.org. That's 1-800-424-8200. Or online at pva.org.
Since I was born, I dreamed of being a Budweiser Clydesdale. Only problem is, I was born a donkey. So all my life, I practiced the Clydesdale walk and the Clydesdale pull. I even tried hair extensions on my lower legs. And then came my big interview. They looked me in the eye and said, "What makes you think you can be a Clydesdale, son?" And what was my answer? I must have said something, right?
All right, guys, welcome back. Episode number 322, WTF Wednesday, the murder of Tyree Nichols. We just spent a long time covering it. Max Waite, welcome back, my man. So this segment right here is probably going to be hard for a few of you to hear. It might even offend someone, but that's not my intention. You know, we'll start this segment off about this whole idea about racism involved in this particular case here. I want to start this segment off with two cold, hard, indisputable truths about the murder of Tyre Nichols. They're incontrovertible statements of fact. First, 29-year-old Tyre, he was killed. He was killed by a despicable mob of shamefully inhumane police brutes. Second, the five cops who beat him to death, they were all black just like him. So the motive for their appalling conduct, it was self-evidently not racism. But despite this, there's a lot of high-profile people out there that's raced to blame white people for what's happened in a way that's truly ridiculous and it's disingenuous, and it needs to stop. You know, case in point, Black Lives Matter, the organization, they issued a statement on this one that once again demanded defunding the police. They said, quote, five police officers brutally beat Tyre to death. Although the media has spent a great amount of time drawing attention to the fact that the police officers are black, as if that's important, let us be clear. All police represent the interest of capitalism and impel state-sanctioned violence. Anyone who works within a system that perpetuates state-sanctioned violence is complicit in upholding white supremacy. That's right. If no matter what you do, so if you're white, you're racist regardless. And if you deny it, it's your white fragility. If you're a cop, now racism has now transformed from being about a specific group of people, white people, Caucasians. Now we're pushing it off over into a career. Anybody, according to BLM, that works for the federal government, you are upholding white supremacy. And then you got Van Jones over on CNN. He actually said that the killing may, quote, still have been driven by racism. I'm wondering, because I've read his opinion column in CNN, and he didn't make a very compelling argument to how this may have been driven by racism. Is he talking about the overall power structure? Maybe, I don't know. Jameel Hill from the Atlantic, she agreed, and she explained that the entire system of policing is based on a white supremacist violence. A filmmaker, Bree Newsom Bass, she tweeted that diversifying the police force, it doesn't end racism because racism is an inherent organization and its daily operation. She said, racism is what is policing us. And then, of course, you had a Florida Democratic Congressman, Maxwell Frost. He posted it, but then he took it back because he wrote in his since deleted tweet that, quote, it doesn't matter what color these police officers are. The murder of Tyre Nichols is an anti-black and the result of white supremacy. Okay. You know, ladies and gentlemen, racism, it's always become an unfalsifiable proposition. You know, such is the central takeaway from the race industry's tortured reaction to a brutal police beating in Memphis, Tennessee. Five Memphis police officers responded to what was initially reported as a car driving the wrong direction down a street. Their tactics during the stop of Nichols that was captured all on video, it's an abomination. You know, while shouting their contradictory commands, these officers, they immediately escalated their use of force without apparent cause at all. It was Nichols, Tyre Nichols himself, who tried to de-escalate the chaos. That's a responsibility to put on a police officer, not a suspect. The cops struggled without coordination to cuff him. It was truly like watching the Keystone Cops. It's like this was their first time. This is the problem. These cops were part of this Scorpion unit or whatever they're called, and they're supposed to be specialists in this. And you're telling me that five specialists couldn't figure out how to handcuff one guy? They delivered gratuitous kicks, punches to his face, baton strikes. None of the officers' actions conformed to police training at all. Virtually everything on the view and the videos, it violates a sound stop and arrest technique. But Nichols repeatedly collapsed and he received only just a belated and listless medical attention at the scene. The EMTs were there for over 20 minutes. It was almost 30 minutes before they put him in the vehicle to take him to the hospital. 3 days later, he dies. Now, rather, Nichols was high, as they've put in the police report. You know, one of the officers even said during the interaction of the videos that he was, but even if he was high, and whether or not that drug contributed to his death, it's not known. But the official autopsy is yet to be released, so even throwing that drug idea out there, it's a farce at this point. I'm like Tammy, I can't wait to see the autopsy get dropped and he has nothing in his system, and then I want to hear what your defense will be then. You know, the initial news reports modified the usual mainstream media procedure for reporting on the police use of force against a black suspect. Yes, the stories immediately announced Nichols' race immediately. But they, for the most part, they deferred mentioning the officer's race until about 5 or 6 paragraphs into the article. Or in the case of television, it always took them a couple minutes before they got into their transmission. Oh, by the way, the cops were black too. But now that we got your attention, I think if the officers had been white, the race would have led on every single report on the incident. But since all of them were black, you know, the reluctance, it brought time until a new racism reporting protocol could be developed. You know, Van Jones, he initiated that new proposal. The connoisseurs of academic identity politics, they are familiar with the nostrum that only whites can be racist, since according to black studies ideology, racism equals power plus privilege, and blacks allegedly lack both. But that blacks can't be racist line, apparently it's changed now. Now we learn from Van Jones and that blacks can be racist too, at least in regards to other blacks. He says it's time, Van Jones says, it's time to move to a more nuanced discussion of the way police violence endangers black lives. Okay. You know, it's the race of the victim who's brutalized, not the race of the violent cop. That's the most relevant in determining whether racial bias is a factor on police violence. So in other words, anything bad that happens to blacks, it's a manifestation, it's a function of racism. Is determined solely by the race of the victim, not the intentions or the identity of the perpetrator. Only cops now are subject to this whole new, the victim alone determines the reality of the racism rule. However, black teenagers who shoot up their gang rivals on a nearly daily basis and who regularly take out young black children as collateral damage, they're not deemed anti-black by the mainstream media and its academic sources, no. The rest of the race industry, they quickly coalesced around Jones' lopsided definition of racism. We're redefining more words from which whiteness has been provisionally suspended. Now, it'll be restored again when we have a white cop who's caught using excessive force against the black suspect. Just wait. It'll happen, I promise. But it's the blue uniform that makes a cop racist, not the color of their skin. That's a University of Southern Carolina law professor told New York Times. That a race activist working with the Nichols family echoed that sentiment, that racism is a clear factor in policing when you look at the victim of police violence rather than the officer race. But more sightings of racism followed. Initially, the media and politicians, they celebrated the rapidity of which these 5 officers that in the Nichols case of being charged with murder, and they attributed the lack of those riots to those indictments. Now, the likelier reason for the relative calm is the officer's race. I mean, a protester actually told the Washington Post that had the officers been white, then all hell would have broken loose. The city would be in war, this person said. But now it turns out that the immediate response from the justice system is just another manifestation of racism. Benjamin Crump, the ultimate race hustler, right behind Al Sharpton, the civil rights attorney who's always in the front, as if he's there for those people. He's there for the dollar, but let's, you know, it is what it is. But he complained that we've never seen swift justice like this when the officers were white. Nichols' family lawyer, the person who is supposed to be defending the deceased, now says that we've never seen swift justice like this when white officers were involved. An activist also working with the Nichols family also groused that by quickly firing and indicting the officers that the city the city and the police department reminded them that they are black men and they will treat them less than just like they treated Tyree. You're looking for racism where it's almost as if there is no right answer anymore. If the police were let go, well then you know, no big deal, right? But because there was swift judgment, because Memphis, who is its own city, who makes its own rules, says, you know what, we're gonna handle this right now. Their argument is these leaders made this argument because they were black. An employee with the Left Wing Center of Policing Equity ruled that sending these police officers to prison, here's the deal, even though Tyre Nichols is dead by police brutality, this person at the Center of Policing Equity said that, well, if you send these black cops to prison, all you're doing is adding to the incarcerated black number. So what do you want them to do? I would like to know that answer. What would you want them to do? They fired them. Well, it's only because they're black why they fired them. They indicted them. Well, yeah. Well, if they put them in jail, well, now they're just... Well, which is it? Do you want justice? Are you suggesting that because these police officers are... are you suggesting that because these police officers are black, that
call
they...
from...
It, that, Raymond Roddy.
That they should be
to accept,
able...
press 1. To send a voicemail, press 2.
They should be able to...
okay. I've sent the caller.
You really think they should be able to get away with it?
Press star to join the call.
I mean, even if this... even
oops, your caller just hung up. Goodbye.
Even the most docile ally that we have, even the most docile ally out there should be despairing of getting things right. I mean, President Biden, you know, he's been sounding the evergreen theme regarding criminal justice racism. He said the beating was yet another painful reminder of the profound fear and trauma, the pain, the exhaustion that black and brown Americans experience every single day. That was his statement in the video release. But and even we had a former President Barack Obama, he promoted this daily pain and trauma as well. Biden made it a regular refrain during his presidential campaign and once and even still now in office. You know, the conceit would be true if it referred to black-on-black crime. And this is the part that a lot of people don't like. Because you're calling it racism in this case here, but I don't understand. You know, because now we're finally admitting because of this case here that I guess now it's not the skin tone of the officer; it is the color of their uniform. It's what they're wearing. You know, it's an unfortunate and it's a sad reality. Sad reality that we have dozens of black folks murdered every day. More than all white and Hispanic murder victims combined. But, you know, even though, again, looking statistically, our black population in this country, it's only 13%. We hear that a lot, especially when we're talking about the incarceration rates and the race that police are attacking citizens. It's an unfortunate reality that blacks between the ages of 10 and 24, they die in gun homicides at about 25 times the rate of white people between those same ages. Their assailants, they're not the police. They're not other whites, but other blacks. So what I'm shooting down right here is this whole concept that if this white supremacy thing is real, running alive and well in this country right now, then where is it? I mean, look, ending all fatal police shootings, and that is a desirable goal. It's an unlikely one, but it's a desirable. But given the amount of gun violence in America's inner cities, if we ended all fatal police shootings, it'd have a very negligible effect on the black death by homicide rate. I mean, as a matter of fact, it'd have a greater effect on the white death by homicide rate, since it turns out, contrary to the racism narrative, that the proportion of white and Hispanic homicide victims killed by police officers is over 4 times higher than the proportion of black homicide victims killed by a police officer. That's about 9% versus 2%. That disparity exists because the number of black homicide victims killed almost exclusively by black criminals, not the police, nor the whites, it's so high. In 2020, there's about 10,000 black homicide victims, 3,000 more than all white and Hispanic victims combined. By comparison, there's about 1,000 victims of fatal police shootings each and every year. That's a little over 50% white on average. About 25% of them are black. Even though white and Hispanic homicide victims are more likely than black homicide victims to be killed by a cop, the racial demagogues still claim that police shooting data on that it shows police bias and it doesn't exist. They invoke the fact that judged based against a population ratio that black civilians are 2 to 2.5 times more likely to be killed by a cop than white civilians are, sure. But the population benchmark, the only one that's ever been used by the media and the anti-cop activists, it's irrelevant for policing. police deployment and tactics, they're determined by the incident of crime, not the census data. An officer's use of force, including potentially lethal force, is going to depend on the frequency in which he confronts an armed or violent and resisting suspect. And these confrontations, given the black crime rate, occur disproportionately in these black communities. This isn't hate. This is what the statistics are telling us. As a matter of fact, the Bureau of Justice Statistics reports that their reporting says that blacks commit about 60% of murders and robberies in 75 largest U.S. countries, which is where most of the population resides, even though they're only 15% of the population in those counties. So if crime is the benchmark for police activity, the 2.5 ratio of black to white victims of police shootings, it flips right on its head. It's whites who are 2.5 times more likely to be fatally shot by a police officer as blacks, according to Michigan State University researchers. This finding of no anti-black bias in police shootings, it's been replicated numerous times, both through empirical analysis and data through don't shoot exercises on shooting simulators. But as for police shootings of allegedly unarmed blacks, the deaths are even more negligible factor in the black homicide rate. In 2022, there were 7 allegedly unarmed black victims of fatal police shootings, 11 allegedly unarmed black victims in 2021, and 18 in 2022. Now, we use the word alleged since the Washington Post, which compiles the data, includes their definition of unarmed as someone who's trying to grab an officer's gun, say, or fleeing in a stolen car with a loaded gun next to him. But those 12 or so allegedly unarmed black victims of fatal police shootings a year, they're dwarfed by the national black population, 44 million, and the black homicide population of 10,000. But they're also dwarfed on a per capita basis. The number of police officers killed by black males. Historically, black males have made up over 40% of all cop killers. Comparing the unarmed black victims in fatal police shootings to police victims of lethal criminal shootings, a police officer in 2021 was 400 times more likely to be fatally shot by a black male as an unarmed black was to be fatally shot by a police officer. The risk of policing, they are the opposite of the ones portrayed by these race activists. And the risk of the black community, they're also the opposite of the ones that is portrayed by the race activists. It is the criminals, not the police, who are the oppressors. And when the police back off, as they did after the George Floyd race riots, more black lives were lost. Biden, Crump, Sharpton, they have nothing to say about those casualties. I remember reading in the 1-year anniversary of Floyd's death, Crump and Sharpton, they visited Minneapolis to commemorate George Floyd. But they stayed, you know, conspicuously away from a hospital where there was a 10-year-old boy and a 9-year-old girl who were in critical condition because both of them had been shot in the head on 2 separate incidents. You know, the girl died a few days later and the boy was going to be paralyzed for life. And to date, neither homicide's been solved, but due to the lack of witness cooperation, where's the support for all of them? I mean, truly. By the time that Crump and Sharpton's 21 Floyd pilgrimage, 19 children in Minneapolis have been shot that year, an increase of 171% of the same period in 2020. Black Lives Matter activists were nowhere to be seen. The slaughter of innocents on our streets continues. A 2-month-old, his 3-year-old sibling, they're now in critical condition in Baltimore because of a wild shootout outside a West Baltimore grocery store, January 28. When gunfire broke out, about half a dozen people or so leaving the store, a mother in her car with her children, she tried to drive out of the danger, but she was hit by a stray bullet. The car crashed. Serious head trauma to the baby and the toddler. The mother died on Tuesday. A 43-year-old man was fatally shot on the spot. 65-year-old man was wounded. No witnesses have come forward. You know, there's lessons from the Nichols beating. Even though it's not representative of the state of policing, police training needs to improve. Officers, they're desperate for more hands-on tactical training. They should continuously practice de-escalation and stress control. But once an officer starts his job, his in-service training, it's perfunctory. Progressive reformers' favorite training themes on implicit bias and cultural competency have replaced actual police training. This Nichols meeting, if anything, it should be a wake-up call that drives the diversity officer ranks as is at best irrelevant to this whole goal of excessive police force And at worst, it could even have the opposite effect. You know, for decades, police departments, they've gone through waves of aggressive diversity hiring, and they've accomplished by lowering educational standards and by discarding the expectation of a clean criminal record. Accompanying results have included corruption and abuse scandals, rather in Miami in the 80s or D.C. and New York in the early 90s. But a typical 2017 study showed that increasing the number of black officers on a force, it increases police killings of blacks. The research suggested that this is a positive correlation between black officers and officer-involved shootings of blacks. It might reverse when 42% of the police department is black, but it also acknowledged that this reversal is not statistically significant. The Obama administration, it found that black and Hispanic officers in Philadelphia were more likely than white officers to shoot an unarmed black person, having mistaken a cell phone, say, for a gun. But yet, the Obama administration's task force on 21st century policing, it continued to promote this whole workforce diversity as a key building community trust and legitimacy. There was the focus didn't exist. Two of the officers in the Nichols abuse, they were hired in August of 2020. Just barely 2 years on the job. Perhaps they were the beneficiaries of a renewed diversity push that entailed scrapping college requirement. You know, there's an unarmed and at present unverified source that claims that all five officers were hired outside of normal department procedures. It was foisted by city leaders into the agency. These people may not have even been qualified for their position. Even before the post-Floyd racism panic, the Memphis Police Department, they led the state in Tennessee in requests for waivers to hire officers with felony and misdemeanor convictions. That means the state of Tennessee has been hiring bad cops from the jump. And that was only a response to manpower shortages. Hey, let's let some felons be cops for a little while. You know, this country is going to take the wrong lessons from this Nichols death. All the policing is going to be condemned as a blight upon black men. There's already calls for abolition of the police. They're on the rise. And you need to expect proactive policing to drop further into the renewed climate of this anti-cop rhetoric. The current recruitment and retention crisis is going to worsen. Diversity hiring is going to accelerate despite the current idea that black cops are white supremacists too. But indeed, the Baltimore County Police Department just made it clear that its next chief will be black. They said, quote, if we could have an Afro-American chief, it would just do wonders to help turn this ship in the right direction. Statistically, that's not true. More black lives are going to be lost to criminal violence. The police are going to they're going to try to stop the bloodshed while activists look the other way. The whole purpose of trying to mix in white supremacy with this horrible case, there is no defense of what happened to Tyre Nichols at all. But when you start talking about racism and white supremacy is running wild and this is a result of it, that's why we hit you. That's why I presented these statistics, because I want you to understand the arguments, they may sound true, but they're not true. When you look at the evidence that is available, it's just not true. What happened to Tyre Nichols is horrible. It should be condemned by everyone. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people that I'm seeing, a lot of right-wing commentators that are saying, well, why did he try to run? Or why didn't he just go ahead and roll over on his stomach? You know, victim blaming Tyre Nichols, for removing the fact of fear. You're removing the fact of pain. Look, man, when you get hurt, your immediate reaction is to grab that hurt or to stop that hurt by any means necessary. There's a lot that went wrong with this situation. Five people, all over 200 pounds, could not wrestle down a 140-pound man. It's unbelievable. All right, so I want to read some of these comments here before we wrap up our show. Roxanne Kirby says, sorry to point this out, but any race can be racist. Amen. Tammy says, racism never entered my mind. When I watched the video, I saw five men who had evil in their heart trying to hurt another human. Laura Harlow says, me too. I was horrified. Laura Harlow says it would have been riots and fires in the big cities, not just protests, moving them down goalposts again, redefining it. Amen. Leroy the Goy, greeting patriots. Hello, hello. Ray Aaron Valvatella, crime that is race on race is then directed to the nature versus nurture argument. There's always that counter argument. It's a great point, Aaron. Tammy says, Ben Crump's getting rich off these families' tragedies. Absolutely. Pat Offrey says, for fuck's sakes, can we just get over that? Military brat, military member, I only ever saw one color, and that's green. Aaron says that crime, we just read that. Laura Harlow says, you want justice, so justice would be prison, but prison won't be right. What the fuck? Exactly. That's kind of a hard thing to wrap our mind around. Roxanne Kirby, if those black cops hadn't beat that man to death, they wouldn't be in the pickle they are. Amen. Roddy Lyman, wow, that's an interesting name to see on the screen. He says, Nuff said, not sure what your Nuff said is, but you can go fuck yourself with the rest of those turds over there just because of who you are. Roxanne Kirby says, I read one post that said they were gang members before they were cops. That's an interesting narrative. I haven't seen that, but I will be on the look for it. She also says they chose to beat him down instead of wrestle him down, and that is the show, guys. Again, I put this off because I wanted to try to understand the entire site picture before we presented the show, because I wanted to try to be as factually accurate as I could. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. I appreciate you all for tuning into this show today. This has not been a fun one, but it has been necessary. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for your support, your patriotism to this country. Man, without our men and women in uniform, our veteran community, our honorably serving veteran community, and great Americans like yourself, our country would be a very different place, man. We're the only ones who stand between freedom and chaos. So as always, gents, ladies, don't let your dog tags dangle in the dirt. Stay on your feet and continue to fight that good fight against everything that's wrong, man. If you love your freedom, you thank a veteran. If you love your peace, you thank a police officer, because not all of them, they're not even a fraction of a percent of the officers that we see in the case of Tyre Nichols, not even a fraction of a percent fall into that category. God bless each and every one of you. God bless the United States of America. Friends, I just want to throw it out. Hey, right after this show at 8 o'clock p.m. Mountain Time, you got Jay Moon's going to be presenting The Vault. Ought to be a really good show. And then over on About Face Radio. And, of course, tomorrow evening at 4 o'clock, we got the Atom Bomb Radio Show. It's going to be a great one, followed by Misfit Nation at 6 p.m. All Times Mountain. And, of course, at 9 o'clock, we have Drive On Podcast. And then, of course, my man Max Waite with Just Waite here is coming on Friday at 06 o'clock. If you want some good rock and roll music, that's going to be the one to tune in. And, of course, me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. Friends, take care of yourselves. Have a blessed and wonderful day. I'm out of here, man.